Be who you actually are, not what you think is right, not what you think you should be, not what other people are doing, but who you actually are, because there is no right or wrong. And in fact, there is a right. The right is you, and no one can change you. You can't change what you like. If you love fast food takeaways, if you actually really deep down love them, make that your thing. Like, shoot loads of takeaways and loads of takeaway locations. Don't then try and be an organic farmer with like seeds and stuff, because it's not you and it's not right. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong. They're trying to be something they're not.
This is your host, Dyutima, but you can call me DJ. And I love to inspire food photographers to dream. I spent 15 years as an architect studying buildings and constructing hospitals before taking the biggest leap of faith of my life, which was setting up a food styling and food photography business right from scratch. If you're a dreamer like me, wanting to start a new photography business or grow your existing food photography business, jump right into a world where I share practical, actionable strategies to improve your photography skills, to work with clients, make more money, or with a fearless mindset. This is the My Food Lens podcast, and we take you one step closer to your dreams. So let's go. All right, so today we are continuing our conversation with professional chef and food photographer Suze Morrison at Gourmet Globe. And this episode is all about creating powerful food photography by bringing in the element of emotion, by tapping into your intuition, but also bringing that forward in your own work, in your own art. Now, I know it might sound a bit philosophical, a bit out there, but actually, emotion is a real tangible part of food photography. And you'll hear more about that as we move forward in this episode, like how to find your style by bringing emotion to food photos, and how to create this in client projects or commercial work is also something we're going to talk about. So are you ready or are you ready? All right, here we go. Let's say you have a client project. What would be your thought process? I mean, I'm sure you don't just go and you're like, oh, let's just see how I'm feeling today and, you know, take it from there. So you're not just winging it all the time. I'm sure there's some kind of thought process that you have in place. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah. I mean, it probably came out completely wrong. I do not wing it. I'm not a winging it person. It freaks me out. So I'm very planned. And so for all my client shoots, we have an initial discussion. We'll have a Zoom call. I like to speak to people face to face because I feel emails can get misinterpreted, or you can find someone as cold when they're not. And I like to know the personality, obviously, of the brand that I'm working with. Then I will create a mood board from what I think I've taken from that Zoom call. But what I also ask my clients to do is I ask them to create a mood board. But where possible, I ask them to create their mood board from my own images. So I ask them to go on my website, my Instagram, scroll away as far back if they want to go, and create a mood board as far as possible, because obviously they've picked me because they like my work. And I like to see what elements of my own work they like, because a lot of clients will pick images from, you know, left, right, and center from people that, you know, it's not my style, or I don't know how to do, or they're very Photoshopped. You know, I don't use Photoshop, to be honest. I'll use it for tiny, weeny little things, but, you know, what, I'm not a big retoucher. So if something's really retouched and product photography and stuff, if someone gives me that image, it's very, very hard for me to conceptualize that. So I ask them to make a mood board from my own work, which everyone has done. All my clients do it because obviously they've seen my work. And that really helps me because I know in my head, I know what lighting style they like. I know how I've lit it. I get an idea for what props I have, what glassware they like, what backdrop. So from that mood board, I then go back and I define my idea of what each set would be. But I always say to them, this is not set in stone. It may change. We'll see how it goes on the day. But I know Step one is to be on a dark background and you want the bottle in focus and you want this cocktail. So we have a rough outline, and in my head, for say 2 weeks prior to the shoot, I will go out and I'll play around and I'll pop down a couple of glasses, et cetera, et cetera. And I'll have maybe three setups that I've decided could work. Then on the morning of the shoot, I get up, I know what time I will be shooting. I always buy my ingredients for my shoot on the morning because I have to make sure they're super fresh. So I'll nip out to the market or the supermarket, grab what I need. Then I'll get set up, and I always start around 12-ish. And come then, you know, it just depends how I'm feeling. Like I say, if I'm in a slightly low or harassed mood, then I'll have an egg crate on my artificial light and we'll get really deep shadows going in there. It will still be a similar set, but I might just tweak my emotion into it. If I'm feeling a bit lighter and brighter, the egg crate comes off, we maybe shove in a couple of plants and we get a different vibe, but still within the parameters of the brief. I will not say this is the setup and I will not move it, because if it doesn't feel right to me on the day, I can't do it. I can't then edit it the way I want it to be edited. So I will always stick to the brief. I will have my plan in place, but I am always open to it being tweaked and changed on the day according to how I feel. So I think that's how I plan my shoots. I think I'm actually in the minority. I will edit the same day as I shoot. So I will shoot less in a day and have my finished product at the, I work long days. I work long days. I will say that, but I will shoot and I will edit and I will have that first edit completed within the day, purely because, like I say, my work is full of emotion. I can't edit yesterday's emotion into today's edit because I'm not feeling that way. So if I've been immersed in a shoot and it's been a dark and moody shoot all day, I will be in that dark and moody vibe to then edit it dark and moody. But if I shoot all dark and moody, then all light and airy, and then another day of bright yellow, then another day of green, and then I edit them all in one batch, I'm jumping from mood to emotion to mood, and I can't then put myself into it because it's just applying a color, isn't it? It's not applying a mood. It's just like, oh, this is light, I'll lift the shadow. You know, it's not putting that mood in. So I have a very strict rule that no matter what time I finish, I will edit that day. I'm open to re-edits, but at least I put the boundaries down. And the other thing that I do now is I edit on Capture One. So I will shoot tethered, unless it's an outdoor shoot. I will shoot tethered into my computer. And the great thing about Capture One is I can start editing my photo. So I will take the set and I'll set the white balance. Then I'll set my levels. Then I'll put my curve on. So every single shot after that will follow the same edits. But I'm also applying the mood actually at the shoot. So it's in that moment in time. How I feel is actually being transferred into the edit as I go. And I find that really, really helpful. It took me a long time to do it, don't get me wrong, but I cannot put a higher value on shooting tethered. A, because you see what you're getting and you see what it's going to look like on the computer. But B, not just, a lot of people shoot tethered for composition or putting on grids and stuff. I'm not so bothered about that. It's more because I can edit in the moment. And also when you come to edit in the evening, you know, half of your edits are done. You've done your white balance. You've got the levels, you know, and it's just tweaking local edits or something. But I find that a very, very good way of working if you do want to apply yourself into your photos. Obviously, that's not going to be everyone's sort of main parameter when they edit. Maybe they do want to look for a certain style. Maybe they are following the photography style. You know, maybe that's not high on anyone's priorities. But if it is high on your priorities, I can't recommend doing it in the moment, just laying down some foundations while you're there. Because obviously that is how you're feeling right then. So I think, yeah, that's how I approach a shoot. If it's a personal shoot, it depends what kind of personal shoot it is. Some of my personal shoots are, I will have a zany off the wall idea and I just want to try it out. And I have no clue what I'm doing. I've just decided that maybe, I don't know, I want a live bird in my photo or something. You know, my brain is capable of anything. So I approach them in a very different way to, say, a personal shoot where I'm doing a recipe. Recipes, I have an idea in my head of what I'm trying to evoke. Recently, I posted a flat lay of bowls And I just, my friend who's a potter had sent me loads of beautiful brown bowls. And I just thought, I think I just want to photograph the bowls on their own. So I literally laid them out nicely. And then I thought, well, they're lacking something. So I randomly put quail's eggs in a few of the bowls. And I thought, I like this. So we just went with that. And it's really, I can't recommend that enough. Approaching a shoot where you have no pressure, no one is asking for it. You're not even, you're asking yourself for it. You are literally just playing with an idea and just seeing what comes out the camera. And I cannot tell you what a breath of fresh air it is. And we all need to do it. We all need to have that breather. And I will honestly put my hand on my heart and say, some of your best work will come from these shoots because there's no pressure and you are putting yourself into it with no one asking anything of you. And yeah, my bowl flat lay is one of my favorite pictures I've ever taken. And it's empty bowls with eggs. Can you get more random than that? It was so fun to edit as well, because it was quite challenging. You know, they were really shiny, these bowls. And editing it, you know, editing shiny bowls with artificial light on a flat lay, empty with eggs. It was weird, but also I learned a lot about my editing style from that, because there was no food to hide behind. Everything I edited, all my shadows, all my highlights, any tonal grading was there exposed with no food to hide behind. And it was fun. I must say it was really good fun. And that actually, I must say, it was from that shoot that I learned about my own style, because I knew that I was inadvertently creating a style that was kind of similar. But I could never really put I was doing it automatically and I was never actually thinking about it. And it was only when I edited that shoot that I understood that I like soft blacks, I like deep shadows, but then I'll lift the color in them. And I generally always put aqua in my shadows. Who knew? only from doing that, that as I was doing it, I thought, wow, I always do this. And it was quite liberating, I think, to suddenly think, I always do this, so I might keep on doing it. You know, taking a picture of pretty much nothing, there's a big value in that.
I love it. I have a few things that I really want to mention. Number one is that I have done a photo shoot with a live bird in it. I did do a food photo shoot with a big parakeet. So it's something else, quite challenging, but fun. But the second thing is, I think there were some really solid takeaways from this, from your process, Suze. I think it's really great that you've brought up this point that as much as we are spontaneous and we are tapping into our emotional side during the photo shoot, it is equally important that we are organized about our thought process, mm-hmm. that we have a process in place, because only once we have the process in place can we really have the bandwidth to be free during the photo shoot, to allow that space and the freedom to think, because otherwise you're just caught up in getting all the other things fixed up. So for me, that was definitely one. The second one was that I loved your approach of having the client pick your photos to create a mood board. I think so many times photographers get stuck, and they're like, oh, you know, the client doesn't know how to put a mood board together. They couldn't send me the proper photos. I don't know exactly what they have in mind. Well, I think this is a great approach. It's something that I ask my clients to do as well. And I think it makes it so much easier for them. So that's definitely a takeaway for me. The other one is that tethering. I think it's a practice that not many photographers follow. And it's a bit underrated, but the value, again, for different people, it brings different value. And I love to edit my photos as I go as well. It helps me, especially during client shoots. I can show my clients on a big screen. That gets me approval on the spot. So tethering, you know, the emphasis on that, I absolutely loved it. And then the last one that you said, that during your personal shoots, you know, the way you approach that and how your system is somewhat similar, but also a bit different, where you're allowing your creativity to take the front stage. I think that's really a place where we have an opportunity to tap into that emotional side. It's not always possible for us to think like that. Sometimes time is less. Sometimes, you know, opportunities are less. Sometimes project is such. But when you are really doing a personal project, it opens up the opportunity of tapping into emotion. On that note, Suze, I want to really get into the depth of this to ask, why do you even think that food photography needs emotion or should have emotion? Or what is the importance of emotion in food photos?
Wow, that's a biggie. Yeah, it's going to mean different things for different people. And I think coming from a background with an eating disorder, for me, food is far more than fuel. You know, food has emotion tied to it already. It's inherent within me. And having battled that and got over it, I realized that food, it possesses love. It possesses time. It has patience. It's a way of conveying your emotion to others through a substrate that is actually tangible. So if you bake someone a cake, you're not just mixing together ingredients and shoving it in the oven. You've taken your time. You've taken patience. You've bought the ingredients. You've decided on what cake it is. I defy anyone to bake a cake for someone and not feel this little nugget of pride as they hand it over. You know, everyone has that cheeky little smile when they hand someone something handmade. And it doesn't have to be cake. It could be, I don't know, pad thai noodles or something. If you've made that yourself from scratch, you do have that emotion already inside you. And that's not just fuel. That's not just fueling someone's boiler to get them through the day. There's emotion there. And I think that is why my food photography has so much emotion in it. Because personally, I don't see food as a means of getting through the day. It actually really upsets me if I see someone walking along the street eating a sandwich out of a packet. Because I don't believe that if your life is such that you cannot take time out of your day, maybe 10 minutes, to sit down and eat your lunch and actually think about the food, actually enjoy it, actually feel it in your mouth, taste it, swallow it, pause. If you don't have time in your day to do that and you actually have to eat your sandwich walking along the street, your life is out of balance. I'm sorry, a lot of people will disagree with me, but there is something inherently wrong in your life that you don't have time to eat and enjoy it. It doesn't have to be hours. I'm not talking long al fresco dining in an Italian Riviera. I'm not talking about that. I am just talking about taking time to notice what you're eating. And for me, food isn't just fuel. It's a way of picking someone up when they're down. It's a way of saying, I love you. It's a way of saying, I'm sorry. It, you know, you can say so many things that maybe the human finds very hard to verbalize. You know, sorry, it's a cliche. Sorry seems to be the hardest word. But if you've had an argument with someone, baking some brownies and taking them over when they're warm, do you really actually need to say the word sorry? Or is the food doing that for you? And I think that's why I put so much value on food, because it's a means of saying sometimes what humans find very hard to verbalize. Some people even find it hard to say, I love you, you know? And so cooking someone a meal and opening a glass of wine, or even, you know, my sister came down and I made her cocktail from scratch, which she, you know, she comes down for that reason. She lives, you know, with her family. And she was just like, Suze, I love it. And we didn't have to say anything. It's just that I had taken time to do that for her. And that just meant something. And I think that's why food photography for me is a huge thing. I can't just do a flat lay of food to show the food, because it's more than that. You know, it's not just like, oh, here's a 5-minute recipe for a quick lunch on the go for your lunchbox. That isn't Suze. It has its place. I know a lot of people do that, but that's not what I'm here for. I'm here for the cakes that say I love you. I'm here for the quick meal for your husband before he goes out to work to say, hey, I took half an hour out of my day for you. Have a good day, lovely. You know, that's what I'm here for. And I think, yeah, food for me, it's like art. You know, you can go to a gallery and you can see a beautiful painting and there is some weird thing in you that stirs, that actually makes moves you to tears. And food has that exact same power. If you eat something truly beautiful and you take time to notice it, it can move you to tears to just think, wow, how can a whole collection of ingredients be cooked with so much love and stir this much emotion inside someone that I actually want to cry? And it sounds a bit zany and a bit petty, but I have it mainly happens to me on holiday. When I go on holiday and I try the local cuisine that's being cooked by A local person with all their love, desperate to impress, desperate to show their heritage. They're the meals that sometimes bring me to tears because I think they could be really basic ingredients, but just the fact that someone has so much pride injected into that and so much love and heritage and culture, you can actually taste it. And so, you know, that's another bugbear of mine. You know, the amount of times on Instagram I will see someone try and go viral with a 5-minute ramen. And I just think, you cannot make a ramen in 5 minutes. That's not what a ramen is. You can make a noodle soup. Be my guest. Make a noodle soup. If you're calling it ramen, please don't do injustice to the people that take 48 hours to cook their broth. You know, don't do it. Don't give it that name. And I find that quite upsetting. I mean, recently I actually saw someone mix peanut butter into chicken stock with some chili oil and call it 5-minute ramen. Yeah, it could taste delicious. It's not ramen. It's a soup. It's noodle soup, or it's 5-minute peanut butter noodles, or it's something else. But don't give it that name, because you're doing injustice to the love and the emotion that actually goes into 48 hours of slow cooking and skimming and creating that broth and that depth. You know, how can you do that in 5 minutes? And I think that's why I think the three main things for me for emotion in food photography are engagement. So the food makes you engage with the person who's made it. It's empathy, because you feel a part of their heritage, or you've been invited into their culture, or their emotion. You know, if someone's been happy when they've made it, you can taste the happiness. You know, you're empathetic with that emotion. And resonance. You know, you can resonate with it. You're there in the mood, in the vibe. They've created this whole mood. So I think, yeah, that's what I try and get from my food photography. I try and get engagement, and I try and get empathy, and I try and get resonance. And I find that a lot with especially with the foraging and the homegrown things. So it made my day recently. I posted a picture of me podding broad beans, because it's like a spring joke that, you know, double podding begins here, because you just get this glut. And I had so many people, maybe about 25, DM me to say, this reminds me of my grandma, or I did this with my grandma, or I remember watching my grandma do this. And I suddenly thought, wow, my grandma didn't do it. You know, I thought, wow, you know, that's just made my day, that I've actually evoked a memory in all these people just by my broad beans. And that does it for me. So I think if anyone wants to take anything away from this, when they're creating their photos, it can be three different things, but try and start on engagement, empathy, and resonance. Because if you're trying to get those three things into one image, you're doing well. And you're putting your soul into it. And I think, yeah, I've always got that in the back of my mind when I'm creating.
So when you said resonance, I think I was just transported. So I live in Singapore. It's extremely urban. We import everything, almost everything from Australia, Malaysia, you know, all the countries surrounding. We don't go foraging. We don't have farmers markets here. It's extremely urban. We have terrace gardens where you can see maybe a lettuce getting planted. We have a little bit, but it's only recent. So I'm coming from a place where I'm in an extremely urban environment. I'm not surrounded by all this nature's bounty. But the one thing that I feel that you said about resonance, the one thing that I tap into if I'm thinking of emotion, for me, it's all about nostalgia. Mm-hmm. Food, like you said, there are certain foods that bring tears. For me, there are certain recipes when I talk about them, when I write them, when I share them, when I eat them, it instantly takes me to the moment where my mom first fed me that particular recipe. So whenever I'm shooting something like that, I go back to that moment and create maybe colors, maybe the time of the day that I can remember eating that particular food. So resonance was like such a great point. And I think nostalgia, especially for, at least in my culture, nostalgia with food is the most powerful emotion that we tap into. Like you said, grandma, you know, the broad beans themselves, that's nostalgia. So that's definitely such a powerful thing that you brought up. The other thing I wanted to share, Suze, just hearing your answer, was that food photography is so much different. So again, I've come from a world of architecture. You've had a background in art as well. Food photography is so different because when we photograph people, people have emotions, people have expressions. People can instill some kind of an emotion when you look at their face. If we look at a beautiful landscape, you have snow-capped mountains, you have the rivers, you have streams, you have energy. So that instills a certain kind of emotion, and that comes, you know, directly from nature, the way you're seeing it. But for us, many times, for us who are not out in nature photographing food, we kind of have to tap into that part, that emotion that that food might bring for us or for someone else. It's a little bit more challenging because food doesn't smile. It doesn't have expressions. It's not going to say, hey, cheers, you know. Yeah, so I feel like that's just an added responsibility for us food photographers. And when we can tap into our intuition, like you said, into the depth of that food, how we taste it, and the richness of its maybe background, the way it's made, I think it makes it so much easier for us to bring that.
There's another element for me, actually, I probably haven't mentioned. My degree is actually biological sciences. So I'm actually a trained scientist by trade. And I think that helps me as well a lot, because I'm always looking for the nutritional value or what particular foods have to offer. And that often helps in the photography style, because if I know, say, nettles, they're very cleansing. And so then I'll know that if I'm photographing something with nettles in it, I generally want it to look a bit fresh, quite clean, you know, and I think that's a good way of thinking. You know, marigolds are very good in the summer for cuts, stings, burns. And so you'll be kind of looking then to kind of put a warm, heated vibe on it, you know, because you're thinking, wow, that's when the insects are out. That's when the sun is out. That's when people are out playing and they might get cuts and grazes. And so you kind of want to change your lighting to, and I think for me, having that scientific background as well really helps, because I know the properties of the food. And when you know the properties of the food, you can then hone into that as well as the personal feeling, as well as the nostalgia, as well as the heritage. And you end up with this kind of little package that's unique to that one food. And that's where you start opening the package and applying it to your edit or your shoot. So yeah, there is so much more than putting down a plate and making it look nice. I can't tell you.
Yeah. And you've got the chef background, you've got the art, you've got the biology, sciences background. Oh my God. And that's why we see all of that coming together in such an artistic way, the way you put it across. So tell me a little bit from a personal angle, Suze, like, you know, we all have our personalities, and the colors that we choose in our food photos, or the energy that our photos radiate, or the kind of movement that we see in our compositions, it really reflects our personality. When we are really putting our true self in our photos, our compositions and our choices that we make, they really reflect our personalities. So from an intuitive angle, from really, if we really go deep down within us as photographers, as artists, how can we really tap into our intuition, our gut feeling, our emotion to bring that out and translate it into a photo?
I think for me, the way I finally discovered who I was in a photography sense was from looking at other people's photos and looking at buildings, looking at nature, just being aware and actually being present enough to notice what I enjoyed, what I liked, and what spurred emotion in me. And it's funny, I'm not talking about copying, and I'm not talking even about inspiration. I'm just talking about what made me stop. And it might be stopping because I like something. It might be stopping because something is jarring with me, or it might just be stopping because I'm curious. And I think those three things made me realize, like, why have I stopped? And I was stopping a lot at images shot of food with harsh light. And I was stopping a lot at images shot with deep blue shadows. And it was becoming a pattern. And I was thinking, why? What's making me stop? The images of food with harsh light were making me stop because I personally wasn't liking them. And I'm not saying I don't like all of them. Don't get me wrong. I was just finding them jarring on me because I don't resonate with that style of photography. I just don't like the harshness. I don't like the colors. I find they sometimes look a bit 70s, 80s, which is lovely for some people. For me, it's not something I wanted to produce. So I learned from that harsh light for me, I'd like it on some drink shots, Harsh light for me, maybe it's because I'm not so good at doing it. I don't know. But I didn't enjoy looking at those photos so much. So I learned that about myself through that. The reason I was stopping at the blues in the shadows a lot was because I was absolutely loving them. I was loving milky blacks, deep shadows, cool tones, and it was becoming a pattern that I just kept stopping. And I was also stopping at things that were very nature inspired. So flowers, you know, floral beauty, but also mystery and magic. And probably because that resonates with my personality. I enjoy mystery. I enjoy magic. I enjoy nature. And believe it or not, deep down, I'm a very shy person and I'm actually pretty quiet. You know, I don't like being surrounded by noise. I rarely listen to music. I just like being quiet. I love the sound of the birds singing. I have to hear birds. I have to hear trees. I like being inside, hearing the rainfall. I'm a very quiet person. I never have the radio on or anything. And I think that's where the blue, deep, moody shadows come from. I'm not saying I'm a deep, moody person. I'm just saying that I enjoy cool and calm. And when I say cool, I don't mean temperatures. I mean colors. I find them very calming. And when I look around the house, all our walls are white. I have a lot of green plants. I like grays. I do like creams and woods and anything natural. But I think you can learn a lot about yourself from how you've decorated your house. And I think if you look around your household and you think, wow, okay, this is what I like because I put it in my house. And I think when you go around and you get the vibe, our house is quite light and airy, but it has depth. And I think, yeah, I love cool tones. And that's how I learned what I like in photography, was actually learning, not just looking what I liked, but you have to know what you don't like. And when I say don't like, you know, people that shoot harsh light food out there would be like, oh, she doesn't like my work. Don't get me wrong. I can really appreciate it. I really, really can appreciate it. It's like going into a beautiful old house and saying, this is gorgeous, but I wouldn't want it in my house. It's the same thing. You can appreciate beauty. You can appreciate skill, but you might not necessarily want to apply it to yourself. And I think that's a massive learning curve. As you go about your daily life, look at what you don't like just as much as what you like. And I think that then cuts off a huge area where you're not even going to tackle. Because when you begin in food photography, there's so many styles out there. You get bombarded and you think, I don't know where to go. You'll try this, you'll try that. And believe me, I've tried everything because you have to try. But sometimes you'll be trying something and flogging it a dead horse because your heart isn't in it. I kept trying harsh light over and over and over again. And probably because I didn't like it from the off, I wasn't putting my heart into it. And I kept getting things that I didn't like. And then I just thought, you know what? Unless I can really get inspired by the sunlight shining on a glass or something, I'm not even going to try it. Just don't even go there. And I think that's a huge learning curve, is learning what you like as much as what you don't like. And then, yeah, learning what you like is basically what makes you stop. What Instagram posts do you comment on? What plants do you have in your house? Do you have plants in your house? How is your house decorated? Are you one for warm, cozy blankets? Or do you like stark, fresh, you know, harsh line interiors with crisp white walls and stainless steel? And I think by looking at that, you can learn a lot about yourself and what kind of niche you're going to sit in. And I'm not saying you have to stay in that niche. I'm just saying that will be your USP. That will be the way you edit your photos. Whether they're dark and moody, light and airy, somewhere in between, you're going to know where you sit in that, whether you're warmer, you're cooler, you know, deeper shadows, softer shadows. You know what you like. And I think that's a great way to hone your style.
Yeah. And I think you bring us such a great point that to be able to tap into your intuition or your feelings, you have to be in tune with your intuition and feelings. You have to question yourself. You have to be present to be able to ask yourself, do I really like this? And it doesn't start with, do I like this photo or I don't like this photo? It really starts with, who am I as a person? Do I enjoy this or do you enjoy that? And then from that, you build up to the kind of art, you know, like you said, the space that you are in. What are the colors that you chose for yourself? What are the clothes that you do? Do you like patterns? Do you like solids? you know, all those things. So yeah, I think just being in tune with who you are, starting there and then translating that to your art. Like you said, your editing style. For me, I just can't get myself to lift up the blacks in editing. That is just like, it just blows my mind when I see them. Like, no, that's fake. So I cannot deal with it. Every time I see it, I'm like, oh, that's just so not me. And that's not something I knew when I started. So as you said, that the more you question, the more you your choices, you know, your standard of creation, the improvisation of your quality of your own work, it changes over time. All of this evolves. And I think this process that you describe, Suze, of being in tune and questioning things, I think it is the only way to even discover your own photography style as you evolve, which also keeps changing as you grow as an artist. But I think...
I just wanted to add one thing to that. When you're talking about who you are, there's a huge, big caveat on that. It's not who you think you should be or who people think you should be. It's who you actually are. Because I know when I started out, I thought I should be one of the photography school alumni. I thought I had to be that white background person. And I wasn't. And I kept trying and trying and trying. And I think a lot of people think, you know, maybe listening to this, people would be like, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to fill my house with plants and walk the dog in nature and be a nature photographer and put nature in everything I do because that's what other people do. And that's just so not it. If you couldn't give a toot about nature or trees or art, don't do it. Do what you love. You know, if you love straight lines, brick, architecture, steel, rugged, corrugated iron, do that because that's what you'll do best. Don't do what you think or don't follow the crowd. Or, I mean, my saying is be a flamingo amongst a flock of pigeons. Just be who you are and don't follow the crowd because I think that's where I started off really on the wrong foot. I kept aspiring to be so many different people or what I thought people wanted to see, but I completely lost who I was. Within 6 months of food photography, I'd done 3 courses and each course was from a different photographer with a completely different style. And whilst doing that course, I was like, that's my style. I want to do that. And then I moved on to the next one. I was like, no, that's my style. I want to do that. Then I moved on to that. And I was utterly flummoxed because I ended up trying to be all 3 things at one time, neither of which I did well. And none of them had me in it. And I think that's what I'm trying to say. Be who you actually are, not what you think is right, not what you think you should be, not what other people are doing, but who you actually are, because there is no right or wrong. And in fact, there is a right. The right is you and no one can change you. You can't change what you like. If you love fast food takeaways, if you actually really deep down love them, make that your thing. Like shoot loads of takeaways and loads of takeaway locations. Don't then try and be an organic farmer with like seeds and stuff because it's not you and it's not right. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong. They're trying to be something they're not.
And I'm so glad that you're bringing this up, Suze, because I remember that I had a couple of food photography mentors and they are big names. Everybody knows them. And I still remember that when I started out, I came from an architecture background. So my sense of aesthetics, proportion and everything, I didn't really take a course for, you know, food photography. I went with my intuition of what balance was for me, what compositions were for me, and also what food was for me. I wanted to do things a bit differently. And a lot of feedback that I got from some of my mentors was that, oh, you know, well, they didn't really like it because it was not done how everybody else at that time was doing it. And it shook me a little bit. And I was like, am I doing it wrong? And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to keep doing it. Even if my composition looks fake, it's not something that somebody would see in real life. I'm going to put a freaking twig over there if I want to. I'm going to go and pick up dry leaves and I'm going to put them, you know, even if they're not edible, because that is the composition or that's the art that I want to create. And I think this is so important for anyone who's starting out to hear this, because we get influenced, we get inspired, and we feel like we want to be someone else. But the biggest advantage of being an artist is that you have the freedom to be whoever you want to be. you are not constrained by what the world wants you. And the more unique you are, the more you stand out and you make a name for yourself. So I just absolutely love that you brought that up.
Yeah, everyone has their own creativity. And I think for me, that the saddest thing, it's not sad, I just find it a little bit constricting when you see someone and you automatically know they're the protege of a certain food photographer, because you can tell it's like the mini me. And there's a few out there, and there's a lot of mini me's out there. And I just think, you've got amazing talent and you've got an amazing style. You could actually push those boundaries even wider and be yourself. And I think I love the courses. Don't get me wrong. Courses are amazing and they teach you so much. But people need to learn that they're just the starting point. They're like a springboard to who you are. Instead of following everything to the T and becoming a progeny of someone, just springboard yourself up to be exactly who you are. Use the skills, use the styles, use everything you can from those courses to lift you up to your unique self. And yes, you're going to have elements of them in, because obviously you've gone to that course because you liked it, but just use them as elements. Just don't try and be, you know, just like a little follower. I think so many people have such a huge personality that they can add so much of themselves to their work.
And I think just by lifting yourself up becomes the easiest way to bring emotion in your food photos. I think that's so cool.
Exactly.
So Suze, we've had such a brilliant conversation. I think just hearing your approach, just hearing how you, you know, how you set out your photo shoots, what you think about when you set up a composition, how you started out, what is it that draws you in? What is it that repels you? Because that's all part of the process. I think there's so much that our listeners might have learned today about tapping into who they are to bring out that emotion in their food photography. But one of the things that I really take away from our conversation today is I know that you have this brilliant way of transporting people into your world through your food photos. But I also see a lot of resilience. I see a very strong personality. I feel like you have this, you know, from the beginning, you've had this sense of this is who I am. This is what I'm going to bring forward, and, you know, not following the herd kind of attitude. So I want to end our episode today with something that helps our listeners kind of have that similar mindset. Can you give us like your top advice, your number one advice to photographers who are starting out, how they can move forward without giving up and really following their true inner voice?
Wow, it's a big one to make small, I think, is the saying. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said resilience. I've come across a lot of hardship in my life. I'm not saying hardship, just blips along the road, I guess. You know, I had a near fatal traffic accident. I've suffered with my health, et cetera, et cetera. But I think through it all, I've learned that we're all like rubber balls. You know, everyone can bounce back from something. It's not your situation, it's how you react to it. We all have the choice to react to something with a positive outlook or a negative outlook. And for me, I've learned it's not always easily. It's not easy at all. But to try and look at the good in life and the positive. And I think my biggest life mantra that helps me every single day that I can give you to take away is lower your expectations, but increase your gratitude. So if you can seek some joy out of the small things in life, if you can make a mini fist pump at something that you've done today and ignore everything that's gone wrong, you will become a far happier, more ambitious, more creative, and just a more rounded person. Because if you can seek the joy in the small things, you will be inspired. You will be creative. You won't walk past them because they're bringing you joy. But the biggest thing is, you'll be happy. And I think that's why I am constantly learning in food photography, because I'm happy. I love it. I absolutely love what I do. And because I love it, I put my soul into it. And it's just like a never-ending circle. I love it. I put my soul into it. Because I put my soul into it, I love it. And I think it all becomes, I lowered my expectations of myself. I'm very competitive with myself. I really get bogged down with my own mind. But every now and then I stop and I think, Why am I expecting so much of myself? Why am I not just happy with where I've come from? And it's when you take those little moments that you think, you know what, actually, I'm okay right now. I've got a lot to learn, but I've also come a long way. And I think when you start doing that and giving yourself a little bit of a break, giving yourself a little fist pump when you can, I think that's when you truly start weaving some magic into what you do.
I love it. Such a positive note to end our conversation. And it sounds like it's so you. I think the power of gratitude is something else. And it's not just in your art, in your profession, in your photography, but just in your life. If that's good, your photography will obviously be, you know, something else. So thank you, Suze, for being here today, for sharing this. I think that you've just opened a whole different kind of a conversation and a whole different dialogue, a whole different way for people to see food photography, you know, a kind of a fearless approach. I feel like people will be less inhibited. You know, there's this kind of a freedom in your voice and your attitude towards the art. And I'm sure that it'll inspire a lot of food photographers to be like, chuck it, I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to, you know.
Absolutely.
So I love it. Thank you, Suze. Before you go, can you tell our audience just one more time where they can find you? You know, you mentioned your blog, your website. So if you can leave us with that information, please.
So you can find me on Instagram as @gourmetglow and my website, which is www.gourmetglow.co.uk. And my website's kind of just like a way of me showing you who I am. So we have recipes. We have recipes with images. We have my portfolio of images. But there's also a big insight into my background, who I am. I have blog posts on there and my blogs dive deep, you know, they dive deep into creativity, pushing boundaries. I address quite a lot of important issues in my life. So we've got my blogs. So it's kind of just like a little Suze Emporium of who I am. Peanut features a lot and just a little bit more about me. So I'd love it if you could have a little look and hopefully soon after that, my Pinterest will start. So I'm just working on Pinterest. When the website's up and good to go, the Pinterest will be coming. So you can see a few things over there too.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. Thank you so much, Suze, for being here. Thank you for enlightening us, inspiring us, motivating us to be who we are and for leaving us all pumped up to dive into and, you know, just tap into our emotion. Thank you, Suze, for being here.
Thank you so much. It's been, it's been great fun, and B, just such a pleasure and so humbling just to be asked. So thank you so much.
So that was Suze. And wasn't this like just the most amazing conversation? Something that really tugs our heart, something that really relates back, something that really resonates with all of us. I think just this conversation with her made me go back to why I fell in love with food photography, my relationship with food, and how I can tap into who I am to bring out that emotion in my food photos. I think she has such a fresh perspective on how to tap into your uniqueness to bring out emotion. And truly, we can tell that emotion is a key part of a successful food photo. I think she has such a great way of making us feel free, of making us create from a place that is unrestricted, clearly, you know, completely our own, and also just completely unrestrained. So she talks about creating as wildly as you want, as creatively as you want, however you want. And I think once we start doing that, especially for our personal projects, we definitely can bring out that emotion that we feel inside us and translate it into our food photos. Me, as someone who works day in and day out with clients, I work with a lot of restraint, a lot of guidelines. I work within a lot of boundaries, a lot of given parameters. I truly, after this conversation, feel like I want to pick up my camera tomorrow and I just want to play. I just want to work like spontaneously, just tapping into whatever I'm feeling at that time. I just feel like creating so much after this conversation. And I hope that you feel that too. And to create from a place that is truly, truly you, because that is the only way that we can bring true emotion to our food photos that moves and transports our viewers. If you found this helpful, you know what to do. please go ahead and write us a review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. I would truly, truly appreciate that. But if you have a question, you know where to find me. I'm at hello@myfoodlens.com or you can DM me on Instagram @Yutuma_myfoodlens. I'll see you next time with another episode. Until then, bye-bye.